Session number 8257.
Mr. Steve Moyle, Reel 3. You were describing how you felt before you went over the top for the first time. Can you like to continue?
Well, it's very nervous. I suppose we all were, but you don't show it to your mates when you don't show your fears. And we got busy digging in, and that took our minds off as I was saying about the unfulfilled incense, finally we got some snipers who came up, you know, very soon after we'd started digging in. And I remember a brigadier general coming up to see what the position was, and he was sniped and killed. And the stalkers, two stalkers went out, crept out the back of the trench, and we thought they were trying to get him, see what was he wounded or seriously or not. But they were after his wristwatch. Anyway,
there's a couple more things. When you'd advanced from, you know, you'd gone over the top and advanced, did you actually capture any Turkish trenches, or did you just dig in closer to the Turks? Or,
well, we just dug in, as I remember. I don't remember crossing any Turkish trench.
So you just advanced, sort of.
Probably the Turks hadn't dug in at all when we advanced there, you know. They just open warfare kind of thing.
Could you explain what an enfilading trench is?
Oh yes, the flank of your trench being exposed to anybody coming up with a machine gun, say, he'd fire right along that trench, couldn't he? But the enfilading trench provided men to meet any such situation. But anyway, when the snipers started coming up in, causing a lot of trouble, one morning the Marine commander, Lieutenant Tetley, I think his name was, decided he'd go out and clean them up one early morning. And the people on our left apparently hadn't received word down. They always passed word down that somebody was going over on our side. But the Marines had gone over with Cap Comforters on, and they were mistaken on our left by enemy and fired upon. And I'm afraid they had a lot of casualties. Major Tetley was shot through both legs, and he came back through our trench, our partly dug trench. But he got over it and was eventually the battalion commander.
What sort of front line were you in by now? Was it, how deep was the trench?
It was only about, at the most, 3 feet deep.
Did it have zigzags or any of the...
Very, very few, what he should have had.
So it's a very rough and ready trench?
Yeah.
Were you trying to improve it all the time while you were there?
I'm making traverses, as they call them, Peter, you know.
But and trying to make it deeper and put in a fire.
Oh, spot. Yeah.
Did you do all that?
That's right.
Did you put any barbed wire out in front of it?
We didn't put any, but the people that relieved us, they put the barbed wire out.
And where exactly was this? What was the nearest point that you recognised to where you were in the front line?
I should say it's pretty well central.
Where were you?
Eventually, where we'd got the enfilading trench dug, the French came up on our right, and they joined up, you see. The French were directly on our right, the Naval Division. And I reckon we were pretty well central of the peninsula.
Well, where were you with relation to Krithia?
Oh, on the right. On the right of Krithia.
How long did you spend in this trench then?
Only a couple of days.
And then where did you go?
Then we were relieved, went back to camp.
Was it the same camp above W Beach or a different one?
Oh, yes, same camp.
Had it been improved
well,
in any
we
way?
We called it a camp, but it was just these two trenches, which you could stretch out in, only shallow trenches, 2 or 3 feet deep.
How did you feel after your first major attack? Had you lost many casualties in the unit? Or?
We didn't suffer many casualties, really.
So how was morale?
Pretty good.
When you were back in the camp, so the two trenches, was there appreciably more artillery fire by this time, or was it still pretty light?
It's pretty light.
And how long did you stay in this camp?
We do 7 to 10 days in the trenches, and perhaps not quite a week out, 5 or 6 days out, and up again. That was when we were short of men.
So what was the next major incident that you could recall?
Our battalion commander had decided he wanted some action, and he decided to attack one afternoon, broad daylight. We went up in artillery formation from the beach, and...
What was artillery formation, can you...?
Platoons were in diamond formation, and during that time, we were in artillery formation, we were shelled, but we couldn't tell whether it was old ammunition or armour piercing, because the shell didn't explode, or the majority didn't explode. And luckily we didn't suffer any casualties. But when it came to the getting near our objective, we went into extended order. And we got down, and my section was very near a ravine on the left in front of Krithia. And the A Company got the order to advance. And I remember seeing the shiny bayonets glittering in the sun as they advanced. And there wasn't a shot fired. And they got down into this trench, and we were waiting for orders to accompany them. When suddenly a staff officer rode up the path, the side of the ravine, and he shouted, "Who are you?" So we told him. And he said, "Well, pass word down to your commanding officer. You've no business up here," he said. This was done, and the next thing I remember, we were retreating down the ravine, leaving A Company in the trench to be relieved by the army the next day.
So, when you said your battalion commander had taken it upon himself, he really had, and the staff had no idea he was
making
it.
It looked like it. We didn't know the real orders before we went to Peter. We were just obeying our commander's orders, you see. Whether it's apparently the army didn't seem to know anything about us going forward, what I could make of it. But we never heard much about our commander, our battalion commander, after that. And I think it was Commander King took command of the battalion, eventually. And the story never came out that we knew what happened. Whether it was a court-martial, that it was a wrong thing to do, or what have you.
Did you then, after this slightly abortive attack, did you then go back to the routine of going forward, backwards and forwards to the line?
That's right.
Days in the rest camp and then days in the front line.
Yeah.
Would the next major thing that happened be the arrival of the Collingwood Battalion? Or does that fit in next?
That was after that, isn't it, Peter?
After that last incident?
Yeah.
Would you like to take us through what happened then with the Collingwoods arriving and their attack on June the 4th then?
Well, they'd been the Kitchener trained, I believe, Peter. When they halted, they knelt down on one knee. And it was a really good idea for being under observation from Akibaba. But whether... See, the preparations for that advance, and they haven't made provision for destroying the barbed wire. And that is why they lost a lot of men.
So what happened? What, were you pulled back when the Collingwoods arrived?
When the French commander refused to advance, of course we couldn't advance without him. And a young doctor who just joined our battalion, he decided that the state we were in, whether it was mental or physical, I wouldn't know, he decided that we should have a rest. And we got a rest over a fortnight, I think it was, before resuming any operations at all.
Could we just take it through in sequence, or what happened about the Collingwoods arriving and then the attack and then the abandonment? Can you tell... When did the Collingwoods arrive?
They arrived at the end of May. Just before the end of May. And we were taken out the front line. And they were put in preparatory to attacking. And when they finally the barrage opened and they went over on June the 4th, they had suffered very severe losses, and we were rushed up, and the machine guns were just sweeping the parapet from left to right and right to left. In fact, I don't think we think we'd have done any better. We'd have probably gone down just the same. But I remember the gunnery officer, he had been a GI, a gunnery officer, but he was a lieutenant in the Naval Division. He had his cap turned around the wrong way. He said, all you've got to do is pick a handful of dust and blind the bastards. I couldn't imagine doing that. But anyway, we got our rest, and that was the end of that for a...
How did you feel when it seemed likely that you'd have to go over the top into these machine guns?
I didn't reckon surviving, to tell you the truth. I couldn't see how we could survive, Peter. With that machine gun fire, if you put a finger up, I think he'd... We lost one stoker and just put his head up. And it's so accurate. And sweeping from left to right and right to left, you'd never had a chance to get over the top. I doubt whether he got over the top.
But in view of that, if you'd been ordered to, the battalion would still have gone over.
I wouldn't have been here. I'm just sure of that. So you can tell my feelings. A young fella, thinking this is going to be his last. But you had to obey orders, whatever happened.
You were pulled back for a rest period then. Again, was this rest... When the doctor interceded for you and said, you know, the battalion, and said that you needed a rest, where were the battalion put? Just back to its usual camp, or did you?
Yes. It didn't go anywhere else but to the old camp.
What did you do when you were on rest duties? What exactly did you do?
I don't think we did much at all, Peter, but I remember.
You weren't on working parties. It was a complete rest, was it?
It was a complete rest.
So how did you
spend
the day?
We were under fire. You couldn't say it really was a complete rest. Wherever you were on that peninsula, and you were isolated from the opposite shore by gunfire, so you couldn't call it a rest.
So what happened at the end of the rest period?
Well, we resumed the old routine, going in the trenches and... watching out, you know. And if I remember right, it was somewhere about that time that we had a downpour of rain and the trenches were flooded.
Can you describe
time.
What happened?
The Texanders had a bad time. But eventually, we stood in the fire set and watched the blowing water going. But at that time, Peter, as I said, we were getting so low in numbers, you were doing 1 hour on and 1 hour off. And I, myself, have fallen into the bottom of the trench, rifle and bayonet, off the fire step, and scrambled back quick before the officer on watch came along to see what was going on. You were absolutely exhausted. You were absolutely exhausted.
Before we go on to the next period, I'd just like to look at what conditions were like when you were in the front line and behind, before you became a butcher, which was just mm-hmm. after this. The first thing I'd like to look at is the actual trenches themselves. What did the front line trenches look like? Can you describe them?
In most cases, they were just well-dug trenches, Peter, with the traverses and all correct, you know. But that was after, I think it was after the first advance was made, when they were improved, the traverses were made. And by that I mean the zigzag, which you couldn't be unflated by. And generally, they're pretty good, the trenches.
How deep were they?
Oh, they're about 6 feet, I should say. With a fire step, just a fire step you could stand on and look over the top. On sentry, you see. Keep a lookout.
Did you have a parapet of sandbags, or was it just
Oh, yes,
earth?
Sandbags mostly, yeah. As regards the conditions, the flies were the most nuisance, you know. But we said the blue arse flies, if you were trying to eat a biscuit and jam or anything like that, it was just a matter of waving your hand over the biscuit all the time, you know, otherwise. And eventually we did get bread, but we didn't get bread for quite a time after the army. The army got the gear ashore, the field kitchens, ovens, but we were behind them well as regards bread. Eventually we did get bread.
Did the flies land, you know, the flies, you were wafting them away, were you able to keep them off your food if you wafted, or did they still get on them and you had
well,
to eat them?
Well, you couldn't to keep them off all the time, Peter, bound to get on.
What about, did they come on around your eyes and on wet places?
Oh, yes, yeah. They're a nuisance generally. And, of course, the latrines bred them too, you know. They encouraged the flies and the smell and so on.
Can we just discuss the latrines? Where were the latrines situated in the trenches?
They were just in the parados, what they call the back of the trench. They were dug there and you simply went around like the ordinary closet and put it in the latrine.
What system did they use? The fork, the trestle system?
Oh, there was just a bucket, you know, and a plank to sit on.
Was someone responsible
for... there was nothing at all in them.
Was someone responsible for keeping the latrine area clean?
Oh,
or
yes,
covered?
The man detailed off for that job. Yeah. I'll tell you, one chap we had detailed for that was a Newcastle lad called Richardson. And we were on a listening post in a trench. There's a barrel driven through the trench into a continuation of a communication trench. One side was the Turks, and our side, we listened in through this barrel for any movement or action. And the parapet, you couldn't see over, there's a periscopic rifle and over the top to observe what was going on beyond. But I remember the three of us on duty in there, and this new, he'd just come ashore as a replacement, you know. He was put on this listening post. And the lead seaman was an Irish lad from Dublin. And on his night time, he'd come and ask, is everything all right, you know? And he asked this lad in a quiet voice, could he hear anything? He might have been shot, he never replied. And it turned out that this lad was deaf. How the dickens he'd got into the... I don't know to this day. But he's a good lad. And, of course, he was taken off the trench work right away. And that was his job.
He was on the listening post.
Yeah.
Did the latrine area stink badly then, or was it an unpleasant area to go to, or...?
Well, it's what you'd expect under the conditions, you know. You couldn't expect a first-class lavatory. We used to get used to it, you know. It's a matter of routine.
What about your food? You were mentioning the bread. What sort of food would you eat during the day? What
Oh,
did
we
you?
got later on, we got strips of bacon, and we had a little place made where we could make a little fire in the back of the trench to cook this bacon, you know. And we used to take turns for perhaps cooking, one mate cooking for four of us, you see. And I remember one morning we were cooking this bacon. I was the duty man. And we left the man on sentry when we stepped down from stand to arms, you see. And now this Irish lad was on the fire step, but he invariably had his head on his hands, and he was like, I don't think he was looking out much for any Turks. But anyway, I was cooking this bacon, and suddenly he turned round cursing this Irish lad. "Who the so-and-so throwing stones," he said. And I saw him put his hand behind his neck, and there's blood on his fingers. So I said, "Get down, Jim, you've been hit." And he got down, and we felt saw that he was a wound in his neck, the back of his neck. And what it was, the trenches were so situated, sometimes we got stray bullets coming from our own trenches, you know. And he'd got a wound in his neck. It must have been a spent bullet. It's lodged in his neck. And we took his field bandage up, got him dressed, and we had a job to persuade him to go down. That was the spirit of the lodge, you know. Anyway, finally, he went down. And we said, "That's the last of him. We'll save him." And so, me, sure as I'm here, after about half a day, he's back again. And he had bandages all around his head, you know. So we said, "What's happened to Jim? What did the doctor say?" "Well," the doctor said, "carry on." He said, "I'm carrying on." But the doctor meant him to carry on down to the beach to get to view us, you know. And believe it or not, it wasn't long before off came the bandages. And he carried on with us for two or three times up and down the line. But eventually he's asleep next to me. And these trenches I was telling you about, broad trenches. And one morning he got up, and we used our tunics for a pillow, you know. And his tunic was stuck to his neck with matter. So I said, "Hey, you have to go and get this seen to, Jim. You'd be having gangrene, mate, you know." And he went down to the army dressing station, and the sergeant, who was examining the casualties, he came to Jim and he felt around this lump in his neck. He just happened to say, "What did this, Matthews?" You see? And Jim said, "A bullet, sergeant." "He said, good God, man," he said, it's in your head, in your neck then." And with that, he was sent down to the beach and out to Mudros. And a fortnight he was back again, been fighting with the Australians in Mudros.
Was this fairly typical of attitude in the battalion to light wounds? Would people often try and stay on, or was he a bit out
Well,
of the order?
I can only quote his case. Yeah, that was right under my nose, and he was the same all through in France as well until he got finally killed, that lad. But the spirit was there, there's no doubt. There's a good spirit among the men there.
Getting back to the food, you say you got bacon and you used to cook it in the side of the trench, the back of the trench.
Yeah.
How did you stop smoke or something coming out so that the Turks could see what was going on? Was that a bit of a risk or?
Well, it wasn't much smoke. We didn't bother about the smoke. What we wanted to do was get the grub cooked, you know.
What other food did you get besides bacon? Did you get anything cooked for you and brought up, or was it all just brought up raw, so to speak?
Well, as regards water and that piece, we had to go down with bottles to the well to get it. And the way you got the water, you took a putty off and you put a clovis around the handle of your canteen, that's a canteen where you do your grubbing, your stew and all that. And you gently lowered it down the well, filled it with water, then filled your bottles. And you spotted a job with perhaps 10 bottles, you know, 10 water bottles. Now I've got back with the bottles. Now it's my turn to go down. And the lads were sat thirsty. I've seen one. He'd been lame with his mouth in the dust. And that water bottle, it went down nearly in one hit. It should have lasted him till night, at the very least, you know, from morning to night. But many of them, some lads had seemed to have more thirst than others, and they'd just nearly empty the bottle as soon as you took it up. That was during the warm May that I'm talking about. April was quite cool, it was not so bad.
Was this the same well that had had the dead body in it that you got it, or was this a different well?
I wouldn't be sure about that. I think that one was further down near the camp where we used to go.
So this was another well. About how far back was it from the front line, do you remember?
I should say a good half mile.
And you'd take about 10 bottles down?
I remember one occasion when I went to it, and I was going down, General Paris was inspecting the trenches. And as I passed a hillock, there's an 18-pounder battery behind it. And this battery was firing. And I noticed that, as I looked back, that a shell was clipping the top of this hill. How they'd managed to get the range, I don't know. Anyway, when I got back with the bottles full of water, it appears that some shell had fallen short when Paris was inspecting the trenches. And this battery was, the men at the battery were put on trial about it, you know, on court-martial. Apparently the shells were falling right close to the trench where he was inspecting them. Aye.
What other food did you get? We've done the water. What food did you get besides the bacon?
Well, we were on hardtack for the most time, Peter. Yeah, early on.
Is hardtack the biscuits?
Bully beef and biscuits. We got a stew now and again. I forget how they got it up there, but we used to get a bit of stew, and that was it.
Was there enough food?
Oh, yes. Considerably, we were static, you know, in the trenches. We weren't doing a lot of exercise or anything like that.
Did you feel hungry, or were your appetites a bit dull?
No, I think the thirst was the worst thing, and the flies. That's the worst thing we encountered, I think. And of course, early on, when we were doing this 1 hour on and 1 hour off, then we were in a state. There's one period too when we got heavy rainfall. And that is why there's so many waterways in Anglefly, on the Cape Ellis. We were flooded, and that was a bad time.
Can you describe what happened, the conditions when the trenches flooded, what it was like?
What the trenches were like?
During the flooding.
Oh, well, we made the best of it. We had to do. I suppose the Turks were the same. There was very little action taken during that period.
Did they actually fill up with water, or...?
Well, it was draining away, you know. It was draining away out the trenches happily. And we weren't up to our knees in water unless you jumped down into the trench bottom, you know.
So, what... Did you get any other food other than the partak and the bacon? Did you get any cheese or bread and jam or anything like that?
Oh, yes, we got Tickler's jam. Made in Grimsby, I believe it was. They made a song about that. Tickler's jam, Tickler's jam. We all love Tickler's jam. Plum and apricot. But talking about jam, we blamed, perhaps unreasonably, that the apricot jam was the cause of the dysentery. You know, many tins we got were blown. And by that I mean the top of the tin was blown up, you know. But us being short of all these sort of things, really, recitative, of course, make use of it. But it may have been one of the causes of this. I wouldn't know properly.
Were there many dead bodies lying around?
And we passed a few, not many.
Was there much of a prevailing smell of death and decay in the front line, or did you not really notice that?
Well, we didn't. No, I seemed to notice the smell then, Peter, because when we got into a Turk trench, on the occasion we did, they'd only just been killed, and there wasn't the smell of the dead, really. But where we got the smell was when, after an advance, either our men or Turks were laying in the front of the trench. And then the flies took charge, you see. And we used to get a smell then.